you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for tuning in to the Twilight Histories. What you're about to hear is part two of a multi-part story by Kevin Valbenesi, set in an alternate history of Korea. Before we get started, I have some pretty amazing news for you. The Twilight Histories is teaming up with a group of editors to put on a writing retreat in France, and you have an opportunity to come. We're looking for fans of the show who are interested in writing and would like to join a small group of us in a chateau in France. We'll tour the area, check out the local culture, do a bit of writing, and relax. This will take place next year, either in the summer or the fall, and you don't need to be an expert writer to join us. Anyways, keep this in mind. I'll tell you a bit more about it at the end of the show. And now, for today's show, the dramatic conclusion of Red Joson, Part 3, by Kevin Valbenesi.
You jolt awake, finding yourself slumped over a wooden table, your filthy fingers wrapped around a half-empty cup of rice wine. Your body aches as you sit up, and your eyes sting from the sudden influx of orange light. Taking a moment, you compose yourself, and shortly after, your vision becomes clear. You're in a bar, if it could even be called that. Half the patrons are passed out on the floor, while others curl up in the corners, smoking opium from long pipes. The others, like you, are there to enjoy a stiff drink under the faint glow of candlelight. All rungs of the class ladder are here. You spot one man in a fine suit, sharing his pipe with a wiry-looking fellow in tattered rags. There's even a soldier sitting at the table next to you, a cup of rice wine in one hand, and his pistol in the other. How on earth you got here is a mystery to you. How long you've been here is another matter, as is how much you owe the house. With some luck, the throbbing in your head is the result of drink and nothing stronger than that. Looking at the victims of opium, you wonder for a moment if it would be better to just drift off like they are, until you're eventually called back to your own time. Somehow, you get the feeling that you won't be scooped out of here anytime soon. A glance down at your own clothing betrays weeks, possibly months, of wear and tear. There's no mirror around, but you'd wager that you're a miserable sight at best. Maybe it's not so surprising that you're here in this bar after all. The door to the bar opens, and from what you can see, it's nighttime outside. Another soldier walks in, and upon finding his comrade, joins him at the table. You glance back and watch the newly arrived soldier gesture for a drink, only to find the barkeep passed out behind the counter. Helping himself, the soldier procures a bottle of rice wine with little fuss and pours around for himself and his colleague. Noticing you, he offers you the bottle, but you decline. You look away, embarrassed, but as the two men begin chatting, you can't help but eavesdrop.
I wish the rebels would come here already. I'm tired of hiding behind the walls while the Russians are out there seeing all the action.
The other soldier scoffs.
I am fine right here. Let the Russians settle this. It's their fault Jinsu's men are so well armed. If they'd kept watch in Pyongyang, none of this would have happened. You heard what Jinsu's men did to Haeju? They shelled it until it was dust, all because the garrison didn't surrender. Russians, men of Joseon, they killed everyone. All the more reason to go out and defend ourselves. The Russians clearly can't handle this. Even with all that artillery, they should have crushed Jinsu's army by now.
If only it were that simple. At minimum, Jinsu's forces comprise every man of fighting age in Pyongyang, and his message of liberation and equality likely carried far and wide in the heavily exploited cities of the north, all chafing under the Russian imperial boot. Even with Russian soldiers riding in on the Trans-Siberian Railway, they might be descending into a hornet's nest in the dense jungles and mountainous regions of the north. Entire villages may have flipped to Jinsu's cause, and with tens of thousands of rifles obtained from the Russian armories in Pyongyang, it's likely that the rebels outnumber the Russian forces in Joseon. All thanks to you. What do you think, foreigner? It takes a moment, but you realize that your eyes wander back to the two soldiers. Caught eavesdropping, you try to turn away.
Hey, I ask you a question.
You turn back to the soldiers and put your hands up in a submissive fashion.
What do I think about what? Shouldn't we be defending our own country?
It's not your country anymore. You wish you could have caught those words as they slip past your lips, so easily loosened by liquor.
Wait, I didn't mean that.
Both soldiers rush over and grab you. The barkeep stirs and is about to say something when one of the soldiers points their pistol at him, instantly commanding silence.
You're gonna regret those words, foreigner.
Before you can even scream, you're struck in the gut, causing your legs to give out beneath you and your stomach to spew up its contents. They drag you outside and onto the streets, hurling you into an alleyway opposite the bar. You try to stand up, but you're kicked in the stomach and forced onto your back. One of the soldiers points his pistol at your face.
Say it again. Tell me whose country this is.
Why? You're just gonna kill me anyway.
You think you foreigners can come in here and bend us over? First the Japanese, then the Russians. You all want to decide what's best for Joseon without giving us a say. At least that bastard Jinsu is one of us.
If you think Jinsu's fighting for a free Joseon, you got another thing coming. You won't recognize this country if he gets his way.
Oh? And how do you know that?
Because he told me. Again, the words slip out before you even register what you've said. The soldiers look at you, wide-eyed, and you're certain that in that instant, they're gonna blow your brains out.
Wait, what I meant was...
Before you can say anything more, you're kicked in the side of the head. Your body goes limp, but you remain conscious long enough to hear the excited ramblings of the soldiers until, finally, darkness overwhelms you. Once again, you jolt awake, this time from a smack across the face by a meaty, gloved hand. You try to lash out at your attacker, but find your hand secured behind your back with thick rope. Glancing down, you find your legs similarly secured by rope to a chair. You panic and thrash around, but you manage a little more than tipping yourself back. That same meaty, gloved hand shoots out and grabs you by the collar, pulling you back until your chair is at rest again.
Don't be so hasty, friend. If you want to spill your brains on the floor, we can oblige you later.
You recognize the tightly cropped beard and cue ball head of Viceroy Bulganov. At this distance, you get a real sense of how young this man is, and how effective he must be if the Tsar has entrusted him with total command of Joseon at this ripe young age.
So, tell me, friend, how is it that an art dealer is fast friends with socialist scum like Gang Jinsu?
You struggle again, but another slap sets you straight. You spit blood onto the floor. Bulganov removes a handkerchief from his jacket and gently wipes your face. He hands the bloody handkerchief to a nearby soldier, and it's now that you realize that it's not just the two of you in here. Two Russian soldiers stand in the cell with you, while a handful of Korean soldiers watch from outside the cell. Among them are the two who gave you the thrashing outside the bar.
Where am I?
You asked with parched lips. Your head throbs and your vision becomes blurry at the edges.
You're in Hensong. A couple of soldiers picked you up outside the bar in the countryside last night. I thought they brought me a corpse because you didn't move, no matter how hard we beat you. Why didn't you just kill me? Bulganov smiles. He looks like a kid who just got a basket full of bonbons. My good friend Ilya works for the Okhrana. He tells me that that is his favorite question. Everyone asks, even when it's obvious. Bulganov gives you another slap. Information. As long as you have information, your life is not completely worthless to us. I want to know everything you can tell me about Gang Jinsu. His plans, his movements, where he squats in the field, everything. Well, it's kind of obvious, isn't it? He wants to take control of Joseon. As for the rest, I really don't know. I owe Ilya a drink the next time I see him. He's always right. They always say I don't know. Bulganov stands up and extends an open palm to one of the soldiers. He receives a pistol, and after ensuring it's loaded, he sits down in front of you and presses the muzzle to your right leg. Now, if Ilya is right, you'll tell me one more time that you don't know, because foolish people always think you won't shoot the first time. Then, I will shoot somewhere soft, but not vital. Then, you protest again that you don't know, and then I will point my gun at your kneecap, and then you will likely talk. Sometimes the tough ones don't mind sparing one knee, but usually, by the time we threaten the next, they give up everything and everyone, even their mama and their babushka. Bulganov moves the muzzle of his pistol down to your kneecap. Let's just skip to the good part, shall we? You whinge and try not to look threatened, but it's a lost cause. It doesn't matter how tough you are or how much you weep. Bulganov will pull the trigger if you don't give him what he wants. All right. I'll tell you whatever you want to know. Wise choice. Bulganov keeps the pistol pressed against your knee. Where is Gang Jinsu right now? He's coming south. I don't know what route he's taking, but he was always going to come south. He wants to uproot you and the Emperor. And how was he going to do that exactly? Even with what he stole, he's outgunned. You choose your next words carefully. Really, you're just making things up as you go, but as long as your lies sound plausible enough, you hope it won't make any difference to Bulganov. You realize you can't stall for long as he pulls back the hammer on the pistol. I was going to open the gates for him. Bulganov pulls back his pistol and stands up. He paces about, laughing. He bends over and gasps for air as his laughter turns to wheezing. You! Alone! Bulganov points his pistol right at your head. Do you take me for a fool? No. I was just going to slip into the city and bribe the guards to abandon the east gate. Jinsu and his bodyguards were supposed to move to the northeast gate after that, take out the guards and fling it over so his forces could stage a two-pronged attack under cover of darkness. Ah, Bulganov keeps his pistol leveled at you. If I've been here, what, a day? He's probably outside the walls right now, hiding somewhere in the countryside. Ridiculous. If his army marched on the capital, we would have seen them by now and blown them to bits. His army doesn't wear nice uniforms and line up for a bayonet charge. It's the poor of Joseon. He turned the entire city of Pyongyang to his cause right under your noses. You'll never know who's on his side until they pull a gun or a knife on you. That's his power. Bulganov considers this. He lowers his pistol, but continues to pace about the cell. You can practically see the gears turning in his mind. And finally, he stops, a smug grin on his face. He sits down in front of you, his pistol pointed down. Would you die for Gang Jinsu? No.
Then why did you help him?
Money.
Why else?
He was just the highest bidder.
Bulganov nods. He holsters his pistol and then gestures for one of his men to approach. You panic for a moment, but upon feeling your bonds go slack, you relax, if only momentarily.
I'm going to give you the chance to buy your life back.
Bulganov leans forward.
The price is Gang Jinsu. You lead him to me, and then you leave Joseon. It's that, or we shoot you now and take our chances with things as they are.
It's a tempting offer, and one you're sure you can't really refuse. Yes, turning over Jinsu would be extremely satisfying, but then you'll be leaving Joseon under Russia's thumb, as the troops brought in to suppress the rebellion remain in order to guarantee good behavior. But then, leaving Jinsu to his devices will condemn the people of Joseon perhaps to a worse hell, as he unleashes the horrors of his own revolution. At the end of the day, it's not for you to decide the fate of a nation, but, as far as saving your own skin goes, it's a settled matter.
I'll do whatever you want. I thought you would.
Bulganov gestures for you to stand, and you do as directed. He leads you out of the cell and over to the Korean soldiers.
You have exactly one day, starting from tomorrow, to bring me Gang Jinsu. We will leave the eastern gate undefended, as per your plan. Then you lead him here.
Bulganov gestures to two of the Korean soldiers.
They will escort you in civilian garb. If you try to flee, they will shoot you. If they even smell that you're going to hesitate, they'll shoot me.
Yeah, I got it.
Good. Now then, let's get you cleaned up.
And don't forget, you only have one day starting from tomorrow morning. You nod to Bulganov, and with little more than that, you're led away by the two Korean soldiers. Grateful that you've preserved your life, if only for another day. You emerge out onto the streets of Hansong and find it a world transformed. The splendor of the imperial capital has been replaced by the desolation of impending war. Everything is in utter turmoil as those who can attempt to flee, taking their goods with them. Both the people of Joseon and the foreigners who call these walls home are now driven to evacuate as Jinsu's red tsunami sweeps down the peninsula. Parents are forced to rip their children away from their homes, while the wealthy drive their servants on with harsh words and even harsher blows. All the while, Russian soldiers march about, ever vigilant of the threat posed by anyone who has come into contact with Jinsu's radical notions. Just as some bid farewell to their homes, soldiers rush in to tear the rooms apart in search of contraband. As you march along in the company of your escorts, you see more than one resident of Hansong forced up against a wall by Russian soldiers for an impromptu interrogation. You wonder if your admission that Jinsu's ranks are staffed by desperate commoners has led to the zeal with which the Russian occupiers execute violent search and seizure. You feel something welling up in your throat as you see the utter horror of the situation, the brutality which this monarchical regime would mete out on the innocent. You wonder if Jinsu is really worse, or if Joseon is doomed either way. After a while, you reach the northern gate, the Sukjongmun. Korean soldiers are waiting with three horses, and they are careful to ensure that your escorts ascend their mounts first. Before you can mount your own horse, you're given a thorough pat-down, and satisfied that you're unarmed, the soldier inspecting you spits at your feet. That all done, you ride between your two escorts, offering only the vague direction of north as your guiding principle. Jinsu is definitely north, but where and whether you'll reach him in time are unknown quantities. The journey from Hansong takes you through a number of villages, and in every one, you and your companions dismount to conduct a discreet but thorough search for any signs of Jinsu. Luckily, in almost every village. It's the same sad story of the residents packing their goods as they flee the oncoming rebels. All the commotion provides excellent cover. Where these people are going to flee is a mystery to you. During your ride, you asked one of your escorts why the people of Hansong would flee when the walls are so formidable. And the response was that Bulganov wanted to ensure that the only stomachs in Hansong belonged to those who would fight. Some provisions were being made to accommodate the refugees in Jechon, but that is some stretch away, and there's no doubt that the Russians will tell them to keep walking if Jinsu's forces advance even further south. You continue on, passing columns of refugees as you ride toward Jinsu's Joseon. Your companions inform you that small pockets of rebel forces have been spotted as far south as Paju, but that the Russians still maintain overall control up to what's left of Heju. You don't doubt that, but Jinsu's forces are amorphous, and it's not beyond the ability of a few passionate rebels to flip their neighbors, perhaps entire villages or cities, to the Red Cause. There may be rebel bases just beyond the walls of Hansong, and the powers that be would never know it. Nighttime comes, and you're forced to retire for the night and seek shelter at an inn. Of course, one of your escorts sits next to your bed, a pistol pointed at you the whole time. Still, you do manage to grab a few hours of sleep before you're forced to your feet and marched back to your horse. You ride again, striking north. You know that if you don't find Jinsu by nightfall, you'll be shot and left on the side of the road. You might also be shot by Jinsu on sight, but then that's a risk you have to take. If you are going to give your pursuers the slip, then you will have to keep on with the mission until the opportune moment presents itself. And if Jinsu should happen to lose his life in pursuit of that mission, so be it. After a couple of hours on horseback, you arrive at a small village in the midst of a great forest. You note that, unlike everywhere else you've come across, there is not a single refugee carting off their worldly belongings. Instead, everyone goes about their business as if Joseon wasn't even at war. Everyone is freakishly calm and strangely indifferent to the three newcomers riding through their village. Something seems off to you, but you make no outward indication of it. And your escorts, for their part, don't seem to have noticed anything amiss. You request permission to dismount as you reach the heart of the village. Your escorts grudgingly allow it, waiting for you to put 2 feet on solid ground before either one of them dismounts. One goes to secure the horses, while the other steps in close. Close enough to seize you, should you make a break for it. Why here? Just a feeling. You look around, still perplexed at how nobody will meet your gaze or even raise their eyes to you. Listen, why don't we have lunch? You must be hungry. I don't think you have time. Sunset is not long from now, and we have our orders. I know, but we might overhear something while we're eating. And anyway, you must be very hungry by now. I heard your stomach rumbling while we were riding. The other escort returns and looks to his partner. Fine, but let's make it quick. You nod and, looking around, point to a hut where young women carry out soup to patrons. You walk over and take a seat around a squat table. After a while, 3 bowls of soup arrive with a whole young chicken in them. The smell of ginseng wafting up from the bowls reinvigorates you. Your hands shoot out and scoop up the chicken, hauling it to your trembling lips. You devour the chicken with such ferocity as to startle your escorts. But eventually, they settle into their own meals. You're done long before they are, guzzling the soup down, coughing as you suck back the last splash of it. Satisfied, you lean back. But before you can even find a comfortable way to sit, you notice something strange taking place on the streets. A group of rough-looking villagers carry long, thin objects wrapped in cloth and bamboo mats. The group eventually walks past the restaurant, and you notice something about a few of the men carrying these mysterious objects. A number of them are missing fingers, and many of them have burns on their forearms. You remember the forges and factories of Pyongyang, and the sad state of its denizens. In that instant, you recognize the restless poor who make up Jinsu's vanguard, and it takes every muscle in your body to stop yourself from jumping up and giving chase. You stay cool, reaching over to your escorts and tapping them on the legs. You gesture to the troop ahead, but they look back at you, confused. They aren't from here. They're from the north. That does it. They're about to rush after them, but you grab their arms, forcing them down. Go pay the bill. We'll follow from a distance. The matter is settled, and in a moment, you're strolling down the main road of the village, mindful to keep a distance between you and the would-be battalion from Pyongyang. You have almost no doubt that the objects they've wrapped up are some of the rifles from Petrenko's factory. You'd rather not get involved in a firefight in the middle of a village, let alone one where you haven't a pea shooter to your name. You follow the suspected northerners for quite some time, veering off the main path every now and then to avoid detection. By now, you've long departed the outer bounds of the village and have wandered into the bush, somewhere near the foot of a squat mountain. Somewhere out here, Jinsu's men have made their base, and if you're fortunate, you'll find the man himself. It's a long shot, but at this rate, it's the best shot you have. Worst case, the rebels may inadvertently give you the cover fire you need to slip your escort. Still, that would entail a flight through the forest, and you're hardly in the condition to make such a brisk dash to safety. Nightfall is not far away, and your pursuit of the northerners has led you deeper into the heart of the forest. You've long since abandoned the main road, and have taken to a slow and silent trek through the bush. Your escorts draw their concealed pistols and take turns leading the way while the other marches you on with the muzzle of their gun pressed into the small of your back. You come across a sizable stream and are forced to ford it without any bridge in sight. Keeping your footing is hard as the current pushes against you with greater force than you'd expected. Still, you manage to make it across the stream and even help heave one of your escorts out of the water. A shot rings out from among the trees, striking the man you just pulled from the water in the chest, sending him crashing back into the stream. The poor fellow's body bobs to the surface and drifts off. Your remaining escort looks around, bewildered, scanning the trees. But in good time, he too catches a bullet, dropping him right where he stands. You throw your hands up, not wanting to chance it with your unseen assailants. Moments later, the group of suspected northerners emerge from the bushes, all of them pointing rifles at you. They close in, putting the business ends of their guns within spitting distance of you. Frozen, you keep your hands held high, palms out. "Providence is my favorite mistress. Her plan is meticulous, but it always comes off as the perfect surprise. Wouldn't you agree?" You recognize that voice, and you put a face to it in a moment as Gong Jinsu emerges from deep within the forest, dressed more like a common bandit than the former advisor to the Emperor of Joseon. He advances right past his gunman, placing a hand on your shoulder and giving you a firm, almost friendly squeeze. "Now then, I think you and I have some unfinished business." Nightfall. You were worried about getting shot in the middle of nowhere if you couldn't find Gong Jinsu. And now, here you are, in the middle of nowhere, about to be shot by Gong Jinsu. You're marched onward, up the mountain, walking alongside your former client. Jinsu, for his part, is all smiles. He keeps one hand on your shoulder, never quite hard, but firm enough to assure you that you aren't going anywhere. If the rifles jammed into your back weren't already incentive enough not to try anything. Your feet ache from the climb, but eventually, you reach a small plateau surrounded by tall, thick, ancient trees. Here, you find a humble camp with Jinsu's ragtag band of fighters going about the business of cleaning their weapons, checking provisions, and checking on the most alarming residents of the camp, the heavy artillery. They've dragged enough howitzers up here to reduce a reasonably sized town to dust in no time at all.
So, what brings you north, my friend? The last time we saw each other, you were running south.
Bad luck, I guess.
Oh, quite the opposite. I think you and I are fated to see this through. You told me history would not judge my actions kindly. But now, you can stand by my side and watch for yourself.
You stop in front of the artillery and marvel at the size of the guns. It's a miracle that these half-starved men managed to heave them up the side of the mountain. But then, you figure, revolutionary zeal can make a Hercules of any man. Jinsu places a hand on the barrel of one of the howitzers.
Without you, I wouldn't have these guns. And without them, we'd have been snuffed out a day after we took Pyongyang.
And what now? You're gonna march on Hansong? String the Emperor up in the streets for all to see?
If I can get my hands on him, of course. But if Gojong is crushed under the rubble of his palace, I'll consider that good enough.
Jinsu gives you a slap on the back. He produces a pipe from the folds of his clothing and lights it. He exhales a thick cloud of smoke and cranes his neck back up to look at the moon.
I've dreamt of that night for months now. I hope it comes soon enough, but I see that there is still much work to be done.
Jinsu, you know you can't win this. The Russians are probably sending more men east and south as we speak. I went back to Hansong and saw the garrison there swelling. It doesn't matter how many peasants you rally to your cause. The Russians will mow you down in the fields.
Is that what Bulganov told you?
Feel cold, and you're sure the color is draining from your face. You stare at Jinsu, wide-eyed.
Oh, don't play stupid. There's only one reason you're coming north instead of taking a boat to Hong Kong or Fukuoka.
Jinsu takes another long drag on his pipe.
I must compliment him, though. His intelligence officers must be impeccable to have marked you after just one meeting with me at the palace. And I take it you were meant to lead me into an ambush and betray my position to him.
Something like that.
I understand. Really, I do. Your instincts for self-preservation are considerable. You knew I was going to have you killed in Pyongyang, and you mounted a marvelous escape. Brokering a deal with Bulganov must have been a masterstroke as well.
What difference did it make? Like you said, I just ended up back with you. And I'm sure, no matter the flowery rhetoric, you're not going to let me live this time. Jinsu looks crestfallen for the first time since you've met him. He bows his head and blows smoke from his nostrils. He squeezes your shoulder and mutters something unintelligible to himself.
Regrettably, that's correct. I can't let you live, can I? You'll just run. Maybe you don't run to Bulganov, because I'm sure you know he'll just shoot you anyway. But you may get caught along the way, and I'm sure you will give me up in an instant.
As he turns around and gestures to the forest below the mountain, and to the night sky, full of stars and the waning face of the moon.
Now then, my friend, enjoy this last look. There are worse places to die, after all.
What an honor. I get to be the first corpse on the mound. Jinsu tosses his pipe aside and pulls out a pistol from a concealed holster. You grab at his wrist, trying to stop him from pointing the gun at your center mass. You hear the cry go out, and Jinsu's men rush to his aid. Your life may be about to end here, but you're not going quietly. And then, another cry goes out. Gunfire erupts from the edge of the camp as shadowy figures charge out from the bushes, firing into the masses of Jinsu's men. Those who are rushing to Jinsu's aid turn on their heels and rush to grab their weapons, meeting their mysterious attackers. You take the opportunity to headbutt Jinsu and knock the pistol from his hand. A bullet whizzes past your head, encouraging you to turn and run. You dive behind the howitzers and roll until you're completely out of the line of fire from either side. Peering out from behind the artillery, you see Jinsu recover his gun and fire at the attackers. He's struck in the shoulder, but manages to return fire, and then runs for cover in the other direction. You peer out from the other side of the howitzer and see armed men in ragged, dark clothing, all wearing mufflers. They fire pistols and repeating rifles with deadly efficiency, dropping the rebels. But then, a rallying cry from a pocket of rebels, likely returning from a scouting mission, precedes a fierce firefight in which several of the black-clad attackers are themselves downed. You take advantage of the chaos, rushing out from your hiding place to grab the pistol from a dead rebel, and then you rush off in Jinsu's direction. You keep your head low as you run to a collection of tents, following a faint trail of blood. You thrust yourself into the midst of the tents, searching with your pistol. You look down and find the trail of blood continuing on into the woods. And so, you continue your hunt, turning your back on the violence behind you in pursuit of something a little more personal. A bullet strikes a tree trunk near you, prompting you to dive out of the way. Your body aches as you crash into a tangle of roots, right where Bulganov's men had laid into you before. You roll over, wincing, but you manage to push yourself into a large bush, seeking cover. Gunfire continues to erupt in the background. The black-clad men and Jinsu's forces must still be at it, but for how much longer, you can't know. If you're going to settle the matter here, you gotta do it now. You rise up from the bush, your pistol aimed ahead. You stalk about the trees, looking for any sign of your target. You don't have to look far. A growing trail of blood on the forest floor and on several branches ahead leads you to the sorry sight that is Gong Jinsu, resting against the trunk of a tree. He presses his hand against the wound, the same hand with which he's currently holding his pistol. You approach him, your gun leveled at his chest, and he just smiles.
Congratulations. You've doomed Joseon to centuries of foreign domination. Your friends here will see to that personally.
No one knows what's going to happen. Yes, maybe Joseon toils under Russia's thumb for a century, or maybe someone with less radical notions rises up to free the people. But whatever happens, it's for the people of Joseon to decide.
In a land like Joseon, there is no change without radical notions. But you can't understand that, can you? You're just a peddler, after all. But maybe one day, in your private moments, you'll see that I was right all along.
Goodbye, Jinsu. Jinsu smiles at you. He drops his gun and looks up, his eyes fixed on the branches of the tree above him. You steady your aim and fire once into his chest. He lurches and reaches for the wound, but his hand quickly drops away. And soon after, he slumps over to the ground, dead. A wave of relief washes over you, but there's an undercurrent of something else. Did you really kill the greatest threat to Joseon? Or did you just murder the only person really fighting for its freedom? Would Gong Jinsu's vague notions of a socialist utopia have turned into something worse than Bulganov's occupation? Might it have been better to live under a native tyrant than a foreign one? Now, you'll never find out. The crackle of gunfire snaps you out of your pensive state. Checking your pistol, you find only a single round remaining. It's not enough to guarantee your safe flight down the mountain, and you're certain that whoever the victor is, it will purge the area of the defeated. What to do now? Peering into the dense forest, you doubt that you'll be able to find your way back. Not in the dark. Not alone. Not injured as you are. No, you elect instead to go and see the outcome. And perhaps, with your last shot, negotiate your way out. You stumble back to the plateau and arrive at the site of a massacre. Combatants on both sides lay still or writhing on the cold, hard stone. Bullet casings are everywhere, and the smell of gunpowder stings your nostrils. Still, you press on toward the only two men still standing there. The two are black clad, and not noticing you immediately, they pull down their mufflers. You recognize the beard of one right away, matching it to the clean-shaven dome now glistening in the moonlight under a layer of perspiration. Out of the corner of his eye, Bulganov sees you, and he turns quickly, but you level your pistol at him, prompting both him and his comrade to throw up their hands.
Fine work you did here. I hope you don't mind, but I wasn't going to wait around for Jinsu. I tend to prefer more immediate solutions. And now look, the matter is settled. We can all go home.
You and I both know that's not true. Come, my friend. You really don't think that I...
You pull the trigger, striking Bulganov's center mass. He collapses back, his hands pressing against the wound in his gut. You quickly pivot and turn your pistol on the sole survivor of the battle, and you fix fiery eyes on him, praying that it's enough to make up for the gun that you know is currently empty. The man stares at you for a long beat, ignoring the gurgled pleas for help from Bulganov. He keeps his weapon in hand, his eyes fluttering from the barrel of his rifle to the muzzle of your pistol. Finally, he drops the weapon, keeps his hands up, and slowly backs off. You step forward, urging him to pick up the pace, and he does, rushing off into the bushes. You keep your pistol leveled to him until you're sure he's well out of range and out of sight. And that done, you kneel down and toss away Bulganov's gun. You leave your own weapon on his chest, and then go on your way. You walk about the camp until you find somewhere comfortable to sit. You lay down, exhausted, and turn your mind away from everything that's just taken place. As far as you're concerned, it's up to everyone left to make the most of this mess. You're done. No more meddling in the fate of nations. Now, you just want to lay here, enjoy the cool air, and wait until death or the next adventure arrives. And then you feel it. You feel yourself becoming lighter, less dense. You hear the discordant tones of a familiar machine. You see the dark sky and pinpricks of light replaced by an orgy of colors, all racing past you into the infinite beyond. Finally, it's time to bid farewell to Joseon. It's time to go home.
That was the conclusion of Red Joson, Part 3, by Kevin Valbenesi. Please join us on Patreon if you enjoyed this show and want to hear more like it. Patreon is how we make these shows possible. At the beginning of the show, you heard me mention the retreat in France. Let me tell you a bit more about this. How I see it, we've had one of the toughest years most of us have ever been through. It looks like it's going to continue on into the next year, and the pain isn't over yet. We need something to look forward to. Now, we don't know when things will settle back down to normal, but next summer or fall is probably not a bad bet. That's when we're hoping to run this retreat. And let me tell you, thinking about it gives me a warm feeling. I have this vision of finishing some writing at the end of the day, then have a great dinner, head out with a bottle of wine into the garden with some Twilight Histories fans, and just finish that bottle with you and watch the sunset. That brings a smile to my face. That's the reward. That's the reward for all the stress I think we've all been under lately. Thinking of that moment makes me happy. But what is this? This is a writing retreat. We're teaming up with another company called Angelella Editorial. They edit people's writing, their books and manuscripts. They approached me about putting on a retreat. They bring some people, will bring some people, and will rent a chateau in France and do some writing. They've got it all planned out. There will be some workshops where we get together and talk shop, but mostly this is a chance for you and me to find a quiet nook and write. But it's not all writing. We'll also be doing some tours of the area. Maybe check out a castle or a vineyard. Depends where we go. The organizer is looking into Normandy right now, so there's a ton of World War II stuff out there. Right now, we're just trying to get a feel of who's interested in coming and what you want to do when you're in France. We've got a survey you can fill out, and that's going to help us personalize the experience to you. So again, you don't need to be a professional writer to join us. Don't feel intimidated by that. This is a retreat, first and foremost. That's how I'm looking at it. I'll probably make a goal of writing a show, but really, the main goal is to have some R&R and hang out with fans of the show in France. What's your goal? What do you want this trip to look like? What do you want to learn? What kinds of sights do you want to see? How long do you want to go for? We want to hear from you. Come on over to the website at twilighthistories.com and follow the link to the writing retreat. Fill out the survey so we can get a sense of what you want. Again, that's twilighthistories.com. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening. Until next time, take care.